America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
It is Monday, September 17th, 2007. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Today, Gonzo is Gonzo, his replacement, an old-school conservative Republican. Why are the right-wing nut jobs going to lose it? And yes, as Gonzo packed his bags to leave Washington, but the investigation into the conviction of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman continues. Methinks Gonzo may return to D.C. for an arraignment. His! And he might be able to hitch a ride with his buddy Karl Rove. That and the conservatives don't seem to have the capacity to think, and that's a scientific study. And, there's a late entry to the pack of GOP pygmies running for the presidency, or I guess the nomination, I should say, of the Republican Party. Alan Keyes has thrown his, I would a tinfoil hat into the ring. I can't wait till this guy gets to the next debate. I wonder if they're even going to let him. Lauren, do you think they're going to let him debate?
Sure. I mean, they've let all those other circus freaks in.
That's a very good point. I don't know if Fred Thompson's ever going to show up at a debate, though. He may just do all his debating on late-night talk shows, somewhere where we can actually handle the pace of things. So George Bush has announced his new nominee for Attorney General. They planned this rollout right after a week's worth of the report from General Petraeus and Ambassador Krakow. And we've got some follow-up on their testimony. It turns out they left some things out, like how miserable things are in Iraq. But we will discuss that a little bit later in the program. And, of course, the number is 866-303-2270. I will take all of your calls later in the program. And, yes, I do take conservative phone calls. I enjoy them. And particularly in light of this new study that I'm holding here in my hands, it seems they don't have the capacity to think, Lauren. I mean, they apparently have the capacity to do things like eat and breathe.
That's not really what the study says.
Well, I'm reading this wrong, but I mean, I guess maybe it depends on how you define think. I mean, yes.
Did you read it?
I did read it, of course.
Okay.
I mean, not the entire. I read the summary of the study.
The executive summary.
I read the executive summary of it. You know, it's just paper, anyways. Just like the Constitution. In the new Bush era, in the new Republican era of anti-intellectualism, you don't read the entire thing.
Because what is science anyway?
It's just a bunch of bunk.
It's a bunch of dudes in goggles.
Everybody knows science is bunk. History, bunk. Facts don't make a difference. Not important. That's for the reality-based community. God forbid we should involve ourselves in that. Emmys were on last night. Didn't watch. Don't care. I think the last thing I saw from the Emmys was a clip of Nichols and May mocking the entire thing. And that was from like 50 years ago or something. Here's George Bush. This is his press conference today. And you will hear, I don't know if you listen closely, you will hear in the background the sounds of the right-wing base of the Republican Party, which is essentially the entire Republican Party at this point. The old-school Republicans, the more moderate, sane Republicans, with whom I would disagree with on many policy issues, but still actually believed in some of the fundamental principles of the founding of this country, they have basically left the party. Lincoln Chafee actually was the most recent to abandon the Republican Party. Across the Midwest, you're seeing a tremendous amount of people leaving the Republican Party, people in positions of Republican leadership in the states, basically because they realize, well, most of the people who still subscribe to the Republican agenda are just complete nutcases. Anyways, here is George Bush announcing the new Attorney General. Lauren, is it me? I didn't watch it. I listened to this clip, but I didn't watch it. Is he drunk in this?
Well, we've been talking about for a while how you think he's on a series of antidepressants. That's possible.
Well, whatever it is, somebody should mix up a different cocktail because it looks like he's slurring his way through this whole thing. Kalo, did you see this?
I did not, but I cannot wait to hear it.
Listen to this. Tell me if you don't think this guy is drunk. People should also listen for the announcement of the new attorney general. But I got to think that Bush is drunk here. Let's hear this.
Ted McCasey presided over the trial of the terrorist known as the Blind Sheikh and his co-defendants and the conspiracy to destroy.
Okay, hold on. Stop
this
for 1 second.
Landmarks.
Now there is a real concern here. They sent Bill Kristol out. They basically leaked this to Bill Kristol. I guess Sunday. Maybe it was Saturday night.
Yeah, Saturday night.
And he reported this on in the Weekly Standard, which is the rag that he publishes. Now, when they go to Bill Kristol to leak this type of thing, they're doing this to preempt what they think is going to be a massive blowback on this nominee, not unlike they had with Harriet Myers. So you will notice that Bush really focuses on trying to make the judge sound like some type of brave warrior in the war on terror. Because that's the only thing that sells to the right-wing base here. They have to make him think, you know, this guy's just like G.I. Joe. Just like how you aren't, but wish you would be. The guy you look in the mirror and think you see, that's what this guy is. So he's not going to talk about how he is a rational, independent, rule of law guy as much as he's really allowed us to run roughshod on the Constitution. Now, the fact of the matter is that he hasn't. But this is what it's going to take to sell this nominee to the right-wing nut jobs. All right, let's play this again, Kale.
Including bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. For the 9/11 attacks, this is one of the most important terrorism cases in our nation's history.
All right, we got to stop this again, Caleb, because, you know, it's interesting to me that George Bush would make such a big deal out of the 93 terrorist attack, because we all know that Rudy Giuliani is running to succeed George Bush. And Rudy Giuliani, after the 93 bombing of the World Trade Center, completely dropped the ball in prepping New York City for the eventual next either terror attack or terror attack attempt. Completely dropped the ball. Put the command center in World Trade Center number 7. And why? Well, we found out the Village Voice reported a couple of weeks ago, because he wanted to have it within walking distance. Despite what every single person on his staff said about where the best place to put it underground in Brooklyn. We ended up putting it in the 23rd floor of World Trade Center number 7, which just so happened to be a building that was owned by a major campaign contributor to his. But I guess the big thing is that he wanted some place that he could walk to, close to the mayor's office, because he was having an affair and needed a little love shack.
Whoops.
Yes. All right, we should play this from the beginning here. Okay, so here is George Bush. I'm getting sidetracked today. I'm very excited because it's a weekday. I've never been so happy to be working on a Monday in my entire life. All right, so play this. Is George Bush announcing the new attorney general.
Ted McCasey presided over the trial of the terrorist known as the Blind Sheikh and his co-defendants in the conspiracy to destroy prominent New York City landmarks, including bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. For the 9/11 attacks, this was one of the most important terrorism cases in our nation's history. And the verdict in that case was affirmed on appeal. And affirming the convictions, the appeals court signaled out the judge for praise. I found it very interesting of what they said. Here's what they wrote. The Honorable Michael B. McCasey presided with extraordinary skill, patience, assuring fairness to the prosecution and to each defendant, and helpfulness to the jury. His was an outstanding achievement in the face of challenges far beyond those normally endured by a trial judge. The World Trade Center was attacked again. Judge McCasey quickly reopened his court, even though it was just blocks from ground zero. He recognized the importance of maintaining a functioning justice system in the midst of a national emergency. He and other judges in his district worked day and night to ensure that applications for warrants were processed, investigations could proceed, and the rule of law was upheld.
I mean, maybe he's not drunk. Or maybe, I don't know, did he look like, did his skin look taut? Because maybe he got a couple of shots of Botox.
He looks all right.
Are there R's in the word challenges?
But he's right. It was interesting of what they said about him.
There's many challenges. The gentleman Casey was a guy. And show me preach the agent. What? Wow. Man, this guy is just riding on fumes. And thank gosh for that. So it's Mukasey. We'll talk more about this. And really, the real issue is, again, why did Alberto Gonzalez resign when he did? Well, I think testimony that's taking place on the Hill today regarding the warrantless wiretaps would explain it. And the case of Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama. We'll talk about that later. 866-303-2270. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
We are back. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman. The Tom Hartman Program. George Bush announcing a nomination of Judge Mukasey, I guess it is. I couldn't understand the way he was pronouncing the guy's name because I think Bush was drunk. Here is Bill Kristol sent out on the Sunday show. And we're going to talk more about, obviously, the situation in Iraq. And we are going to be talking about the poll in Connecticut. Talk about buyer's remorse. I guess people in Connecticut have figured out Joe Lieberman is a lying hack. And hopefully they'll remember this if the guy ever decides to run again for Senate. And he may have missed his window to become part of the Bush administration. But let's hear Bill Kristol. Selling to the right-wing base this new nominee, and you should know. Well, let's play this, number three.
Well, the Weekly Standard reported last night. Actually, I reported last night but on theweeklystandard.com, but it sounds better to say the Weekly Standard reported last night that Mike Mukasey is the leading candidate and almost certainly will be the nominee for Attorney General. I think the president will make the nomination tomorrow. Mukasey is a retired, almost 20-year federal district judge in New York, extremely well respected. I think he'll be easily confirmed.
Now, give us a sense of who this guy is and why the president would choose him.
He was a prosecutor, then a New York lawyer, and then a judge. He presided over the 1995 trial. The blind sheikh and 11 other jihadists was commended on all sides for doing this very difficult trial with honesty and great legal acumen. He's tough on the war on terror. He's been generally supportive of Bush administration type policies in the war on terror, but not down the line. I mean, he was the district judge in the Padilla case. He upheld the administration's right to detain him as an enemy combatant, but said Padilla was entitled to a lawyer, which the administration was arguing again. So I would say he's a sort of tough-minded conservative judge who will be a strong attorney general, not a movement conservative. I don't think he'll get into social issues, that sort of thing. Those Bush policies were already in place. I think the best thing about him from a conservative point of view is he will be an extremely effective witness before Congress when FISA, the eavesdropping program, comes up for reauthorization, as it will in a few months. On all war and terror issues, he will be to war and terror issues what Petraeus is, I think, to military issues. An independent, well-respected person who's pretty much in agreement with the president's policy.
I don't think so.
Now, wait a second. You know, he had me up until the point where he said he was like General Petraeus. So, in other words, he's a guy who has a good reputation, maybe deserved, maybe not deserved, but he's going to be abused and used by this Bush administration as cover for George Bush to hide behind as he begins to spread whatever it is, whatever little white lies he wants to tell the American public. But Bill Kristol sent out there with the hopes of placating the right-wing base who are going to be incensed they're going to be incensed over this pick, because here's a guy who in the Jose Padilla case actually said, you can't hold this American citizen without providing him an attorney, because we have some basic habeas corpus rules in this country, at the very least for citizens. And here, this is what I found most fascinating. And I'll tell you, Lauren, you want to argue with me about this study that says that conservatives can't think. Here's Exhibit A. I don't even have to get to the study yet. Okay? Now, what did that study say? Well, we're going to get into it a little bit later. But here's Exhibit A, okay? Here is number four. This is Bill Kristol explaining, even though he's liked by liberals, even though he's liked by Chuck Schumer, he's okay.
Let me just ask you one more question in this regard. Chuck Schumer, the liberal Democratic senator from New York, had endorsed him, said, you know, this is the kind of a guy that if he were to be named attorney general, he'd sail through. And, of course, for a lot of Republicans, that's the kiss of death. Republicans going to be upset about the possibility? I saw one conservative blog where they said he'll end up getting more Democratic votes in confirmation than Republican votes.
I think every Republican will vote to confirm him. It's unfortunate that Chuck Schumer respects him, but you can't do that much about some people saying nice things about you. He is widely respected on both sides of the aisle, but he will be a conservative, solid conservative attorney general.
All bets are off then. If he is widely respected, he's not loony enough for the right-wing base. See, this is what I'm talking about. They can't think, Lauren.
Yeah.
It's like it's Pavlovian. Chuck Schumer likes him. I'm going to hate him. They don't look into this guy's record at all. It's Pavlovian. That's
lawyers,
a complete lack of
or terror suspects. Oh, I don't like that.
I mean, this is I don't know. The evidence is mounting. I mean, if you don't have enough evidence already of the past 6 years, if the fact that the Dennis Miller action figure, conservative action figure doll exists, is not proof that conservatives are incapable of thinking, I don't know what else is, but this is adding proof. 866-303-2270. We'll take some calls when we get back. Sam Seder in for Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
We are back. Sam Seder filling in for Tom Hartman. The Tom Hartman Program, 866-303-2270. Got a lot to talk about today. There's a new AG nominee, anyways, that was on the list of Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer and Ralph Nies from the People for American Way. Ralph Nies said he seems like a bona fide conservative Republican, not a right-wing ideologue. It should be interesting to see what happens with Bush nominating such a potential attorney justice, attorney general. And then the question becomes, is the attorney general, is this guy going to actually start to enforce some of these subpoenas? Is he going to do some of these investigations? Roger in Viejo, California. Welcome to the program, Roger.
Yeah, good morning, Sam. Nice to hear you on in the morning on a weekday.
Nice to hear from you, Roger.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is this Mukasey nomination is going to shine a big spotlight on some of the lies that the Bush sycophants have been telling, especially Giuliani and the other Republican candidates who've liked to say that Clinton did nothing during his administration to fight terror, when in fact, after the first World Trade Center bombing, they investigated. I think they arrested 10 or more people. They were tried, convicted, and they're now serving hundreds of years of prison sentences. And that's all going to be exposed. And the lies that they've been telling, you know, blaming Clinton for not doing anything, that's all going to be shot down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'll tell you something. This is really actually going to be fascinating because on top of that, how many terrorist convictions does the Bush administration have?
Almost none.
I don't know if they have any. The Padilla case was not a terrorist case at that point.
The
it was in, through the
conviction for minor offenses.
I mean, I don't know if they have any. I mean, I guess you could argue that it's under the terrorist statute with the Padilla case, but very few. And you're absolutely right. It shows how successful the Clinton administration. I mean, I certainly am in no huge fan of Clinton on a lot of different issues, but on the issue of fighting terrorism, I think he did a great job. And it actually showed the system could work. It's going to be very interesting, Roger. You're absolutely right about this, because another issue is that Mukasey and I believe his son are advisors to Rudy Giuliani. And every time you bring up the 93 Trade Center attack, you have to ask, why did Giuliani screw up so badly when it came to preparing New York City for another attack?
Yeah, I really do hope Giuliani is the nomination. He's carrying a lot of baggage that hasn't really come out yet.
Are you talking about, oh, gosh, Roger, you could be talking about the fact that he married his cousin and forgot that she was his cousin?
No,
I'm
talking about his failure to set up a unified communication system for the city of New York, his failure to locate the emergency center, you know, someplace other than the World Trade Center.
Are you talking about the fact that the reason why he did it at the World Trade Center was, A, because it was a huge donor to his mayoral campaign, and, B, he wanted someplace to walk close to have a love shack with his now wife? That I mean, that's been reported in the Village Voice magazine.
Yeah.
By Wayne Barrett, who wrote The Grand Illusion. Oh, there's so much to come out about Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah. I really do hope he's the nominee, because it's going to be funny.
I will say this, though, Roger. If Fred Thompson was the nominee, you probably would have to get an oxygen tank for how much you'd be laughing at this guy. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen a single thing Fred Thompson has said. Well, in fact, I know you haven't, because he hasn't said a thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, after 1 week of campaigning, he's taking the week off.
I think it just shows how desperate their side is to come up with a reasonable candidate. I think they're still unhappy with the choices.
I think you're absolutely right. I appreciate the call, Roger. Let's go to Ken in Orlando, Florida, 866-303-2270.
Hey, how you doing, Sam?
Good. How you doing, Ken?
Good. I'm as liberal as the next guy, but maybe I'm a jaded, because I wanted to ask you, as far as this nominee, Harriet Myers, she still was like a solid Republican, right? I mean, I personally don't think she would have overturned Roe v. Wade. And I don't want Democrats to get suckered in, because Republicans will get mad when it's not some seething, drooling pit bull attack dog that is nominated. You know, just a moderate Republican gets them up in arms. So I'm dubious that even if if this guy gets in, as we expect, that, you know, he's still not going to – I just don't see Bush nominating someone who's going to actually turn around and, you know, indict people from his administration, or at least declare something that Bush did something illegal. Or I just don't buy it.
Well, look, I'll tell you something. I mean, I hear what you're saying here, and that is basically that simply because this guy – ruled a couple of ways that at least showed some measure of respect for the rule of law in the Padilla case, it's not something that we should be celebrating. There's no way that we're going to get an attorney general who is going to go in there and be the attorney general we want to see. With that said, you know, listen, what we don't want is another Bush crony who is going to be in there, who is going to continue these policies. I don't know if Mukasey is actually going to allow for investigations. I don't know if there's any Republican, anybody who would be nominated. Look, you know, in the bottom line, George Bush could, if there's a problem with this nomination, he could end up having the acting attorney general, who's the solicitor general right now, sit in there for 210 days. Frankly, I'm not convinced that this isn't a concerted effort to put up a guy like Mukasey, have the Republicans shoot him down, and use it as an excuse to keep this acting attorney general in there.
As long as he doesn't fire any more U.S. attorneys, then we'll take that, maybe.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, we'll see what happens. I appreciate the phone call, Ken. I mean, I think you're right to be skeptical here, but the fact of the matter is that, we're not going to get a great attorney general under this Bush administration. I mean, that ship has sailed. The notion of getting nominees for these cabinet positions and positions like Department of Justice, who are actually going to function in a competent and in a way with integrity. I mean, that ship has sailed. I mean, I don't know if you saw Gates, Robert Gates, who came in as like, well, they're finally bringing an adult for the Defense Department. And that guy just looks beaten down. He was on that show on the talk shows this weekend. And they send Gates out because he is supposedly the respectable member of the Bush administration at this point, the non-neocon. And, of course, he is mostly sidelined. When George Bush asked for that extra $50 billion on top of the $150 billion for the supplemental, when that announcement came out a month ago, Robert Gates wasn't even notified. This is the Secretary of Defense, and George Bush is looking for another $50 billion for the war in Iraq, and they never even told Robert Gates. So it gives you a sense of where this guy is. He is another one of these guys they bring in to provide some type of cover to make it look like they're reasonable, and they occasionally send him out to the talk shows to take some flack. They sent him out this weekend, and I think this is indicative that they are very, very afraid of an amendment that Jim Webb has been pushing for some time. This is the one that provides for our military personnel to have deployments that are equal to the amount of time, or rather, I should say it's reverse, to have the equal amount of time at home as long as their deployments are. In other words, no more 15-month deployments in 8 to 12 or to 10 months at home. If you're deployed for 15 months, you're at home for 15 months before you go back. And there, and here's Bob Gates. And the thing they're afraid of, I mean, because we've all heard this line of, well, we can't pass any legislation unless you get 60 votes. First off, you can pass legislation. All you need is 51 votes. The 60 votes is how you prevent the Republicans from filibustering. You remember back when the Democrats were talking about using a filibuster, how this was unconstitutional to filibuster, how it was obstructionist, how it was horrible. Now when people talk about the filibuster in the corporate news, it's you just need 60 votes to pass something. But no, you need 51 votes to pass something, 60 votes to overcome Republican obstructionism. Because the Republicans are afraid of this Webb Amendment. They are terrified of it. Because if this Webb Amendment is attached to an appropriations bill for this war, or I should say this occupation, oh, let's call it a failed occupation, this debacle in Iraq. If this amendment is attached to that appropriations bill, you're going to see Republicans filibustering. Filibustering. How do I pronounce that, Lauren? Filibustering?
Filibustering.
Exactly. This bill, and they are terrified of doing that because then it's they who are holding up the funding for the troops. So they send out Bob Gates, who's another one of these guys who, you know, he probably, when he sat in, you know, when Bush called him, he's like, Bob, I promise you can do, I'll listen to you. And Dick Cheney's got his hand up Bush's derriere, if you will, mouthing those words. Gates gets into office, realizes, ah, crap, I've been suckered. How am I going to get out of this thing with my reputation intact? I'm going to have to be like every other shill for the Bush administration, run away and then write a book that rewrites history. And we will get to Alan Greenspan today, I hope. All right, so here is Bob Gates on Chris Wallace's show talking about the Webb Amendment. Now, what's shocking is that Chris Wallace had time to ask this question because he spent the whole time talking about the Move On thing. Play this number 11.
That MoveOn.org ad. Was MoveOn.org wrong? MoveOn.org, the MoveOn.org attack ad, MoveOn.org. Well, you know, I don't want to make too big a deal about the ad.
Now, Lauren, how long is that Fox News Sunday? Is that about a four-hour show?
It is actually only 1 hour.
Wow. So what? How many times did he say Move On during that? About 12 times?
About 13,000 times.
That's unbelievable.
And no one else wanted to talk about it either. He asked every single person, every person on the panel and every guest, and they were all just like, oh, I don't know. I don't really. It's just an ad.
The whole Petraeus, and Krakow testimony was not meant for the American public. It was meant for the right-wing Republican base. And they loved the Move On ad because that was a way for them to do some fundraising. So Chris Wallace got his marching orders from Roger Ailes, and he did what every good little Fox newscaster does. He just repeats Republican talking points. All right, but here is him asking Gates. He actually found time to ask Gates about the Webb Amendment. This is number 8.
Well, I think it's a well-intentioned idea. I think it's really pretty much a backdoor effort to get the president to accelerate the drawdown so that it's an automatic kind of thing rather than based on the conditions in Iraq with all the consequences that I talked about earlier. I think that if, as I believe, the president would never approve such a bill, it would mean that we would, if it were enacted, we would have force management problems that would be extremely difficult and, in fact, create affect combat effectiveness and perhaps pose greater risk to our troops.
As Secretary of Defense, given all of that, would you recommend, if it does pass the Congress, that the president veto it?
Yes, I would.
Oh, veto by proxy, ladies and gentlemen. I hope the Democrats attach this Webb Amendment because those Republicans, they are terrified of this. Because this could actually force a more significant drawdown before George Bush gets to the finish line. Look, Ma, I made it. I'm not responsible for losing Iraq. I don't think that's going to happen. 866-303-2270. I'll take some phone calls when I get back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
We are back. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. It is Monday, folks. It is Monday, 866-303-2270. 52 past the hour. Jim in San Diego, welcome to the program, Jim.
Morning, Sam.
How are you, Jim?
You mentioned Bush's anti-intellectualism. If you want a stark contrast to how a war can be run properly with the contribution of intellectuals, get a book called Tuxedo Park or Google a gentleman called Alfred E. Loomis. In the run-up to the Second World War, he was a multimillionaire genius physicist, and he got together a group of like 40 or 50 other physicists, and they developed 50 to 100 times of radar that helped, as they say, the atom bomb stopped the war, but radar won the war. And, I mean, it's just sharp contrast to Bush and this Hungarian cluster dance he's got going on for a war plan over there.
Well, you know, listen, I mean, there's a couple of different things that you got to keep in mind. First off, this is not simply a question of incompetence and stupidity on the behalf of the Bush administration. If you look, and my friend Bill Scherf, who blogs at Campaign for American Future, he's been talking about this on liberaloasis.com for a long time. There was a Heritage Foundation white paper that was put out in 2001, and I'm going to let you go because your phone's a little staticky.
Yeah. But,
I'll let you go, and I'll tell you about this. A Heritage Foundation paper put out in 2001 that specifically said, get rid of your technocrats, get rid of the people who are career workers in all different levels of bureaucracy, and put in political apparatchiks. Put in people who are just going to be loyal to you politically. And if you look down the line, whether it's at regulatory agencies like the FDA, whether it's FEMA putting in Joe Alba and then heck of a job, Brownie. If you look at what went on in the Coalition Provisional Authority, just streams of Republican operatives, not professionals, not people who knew anything about Reconstruction, not people who knew anything about civil society in any way. I worked on the campaign. I was down in that Brooks Brothers mob in Florida. Hire me. You got the job, buddy. This is the way it worked at the Department of Justice. This is the way it worked in every single agency. This is not a function of incompetence. This is a function of a right-wing ideology that believes power is more relevant than actually having government that serves the people or serves itself or serves the military or functions in any proper way. A functioning government under the conservative ideology is not one that delivers services properly. It is one which helps the political agenda of the conservative movement. So you get a guy who is installed in Iraq to deal with all the buildings of the hospitals and the health issues, whose number one initiative is to help a smoking cessation program. And the reason why he's appointed is because he was a big so-called pro-lifer. I mean, this is what you get when you do not believe in the concept of government. Sue in Prescott, Arizona. We just got about a minute, Sue.
Hi, Sam. It's so good to hear you back. I wish you were on every day. You used to start my morning off right. And I just wanted to say that I think when the Bush administration starts to put things in the Patriot Act and these new amendments to the FISA laws, that anything that affects our constitutional rights should go the same process as passing an amendment. It should have to go to all the states and be voted on, and maybe we could keep them from taking away some of our rights.
I mean, the problem is, Sue, is this dispute as to whether or not it affects our constitutional rights, because it takes so long for it to get up to the Supreme Court to make those determinations. But, I mean, I agree with you in principle.
Yeah.
But frankly, you know, I want to see more out of the Democrats. They've been in power now for 10 months. I want to see them restore habeas corpus.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
And more, for that matter. But, I mean, certainly they can do more on this. But
yes.
I think your sentiment is correct.
Okay.
Appreciate the call, Sue. Good hearing from you. I hope my wife is listening to this. I hope Nikki is listening to this. When I get a call from a woman who says that it's good to hear you in the morning. Because I don't get that reception at home. Actually, I hope my wife is not listening to this, because I'm gonna pay for that comment when I get home. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman. We'll take more calls on the other side, 866-303-2270. We'll be right back.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
That's right. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman. Thank you, Tom. I think, where's Tom? He's like in Germany or something, right? He lives a very jet-set life. Tom does. I live just about the complete opposite life. A completely sedentary life, because I'm weighed down by my child, my family. But I love them both very much. Let's move on, shall we? incidentally, if you want to see Lauren's reaction to some of my comments, you can do so on the SammyCam at samcedarshow.com. And, of course, we are streaming live at airamerica.com, and there's a lot of great stuff for you to peruse over at that website, if you haven't been there in a while. LA Times reported, just on, I guess, Friday, that a British polling agency, ORB, ORB, has conducted several surveys in Iraq, and have, determined, according to ORB poll, a survey of 1,500 adults suggests that the total number slain during the more than 4 years of war was 1.2 million Iraqis. That is 1.2 million Iraqis. If you'll remember, last year, the British Medical Journal, essentially the British version of the New England Journal of Medicine, The Lancet, put the number at around 660,000. But that was last year. That study, of course, is performed by researchers from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. This debacle in Iraq is responsible for the deaths of, I guess, depending on which of these studies, and there are about four of them now, that put the figure somewhere between 650,000 to 1.2 million Iraqi civilians. This is on top, of course, of the 2 million Iraqis who have been internally displaced. In other words, ethnic cleansing has driven 2 million Iraqis out of their home and another 2.2 million out of the country entirely. We are talking about a country with a population of 25 million people. So one-fifth of the entire Iraqi population killed or displaced. Things are going swimmingly over there. And Alan Greenspan chimes in talking about, we just mentioned the parade of people who are looking to distance themselves from the Bush administration policies. Alan Greenspan writes apparently in his memoir to be published today. You remember Alan Greenspan. He was the guy who back in the early 80s was appointed to a commission to look at Social Security. And he suggested at that time and recommended, and the recommendation was followed, was to raise the Social Security tax, of course capped at $90,000. So anything you make over $90,000 was not to be taxed. To raise the Social Security tax because of anticipating a potential change in demographics. So you'd want to build up what was known as a Social Security Trust Fund. That was undertaken. It, in fact, did build a Social Security Trust Fund. You'll remember that Al Gore, during his campaign in 2000, was talking about a lockbox. We all laughed at him. I didn't, really, but let's just, for the sake of argument, we all laughed at Al Gore. Lockbox, lockbox, Well, back in 2001, Alan Greenspan recommended tax cuts. He endorsed George Bush's plan of tax cuts on the wealthiest Americans, saying that it's a little bit dangerous that we have surpluses. We don't want surpluses. So I will endorse these tax cuts. And, of course, we know that these tax cuts essentially were paid, were balanced out, both by record-setting deficits. We now have a $9 trillion debt. I think they just raised the ceiling again. It was something like $4 trillion when George Bush took office. And in addition to creating all this debt, George Bush also raided this Social Security Trust Fund. You remember when he said, it's just a file cabinet. There's no paper. There's no money. It's just a little piece of paper that says IOU. It means nothing. And so now Alan Greenspan has written his memoir claiming, you know, I actually was against the tax cut. I know it sounded like I endorsed it, but then of the 5,000 different times I testified in front of Congress following that one time I endorsed it, I never bothered to provide a correction. And if you remember, I think in 2004, he recommended the extension of these tax cuts. So Alan Greenspan now looking at the economic disaster that is facing the United States, it's time for him to rewrite history. Though he does add in this memoir, I'm saddened that it is politically inconvenient to acknowledge what everyone knows. The Iraq war is largely about oil.
Surprise, surprise.
I am shocked. I am shocked. I must be reading this. I'm saddened that it is politically inconvenient to acknowledge what everyone knows. The Iraq war is largely about oil. Ladies and gentlemen, that noise is cats and dogs falling from the skies. You remember how we were all branded lunatics. You've got to be crazy. The Iraq war is not about oil. You've got to be crazy. I don't hear anybody calling Alan Greenspan crazy. Lauren, do we have the sound of the people calling Alan Greenspan crazy this weekend?
We would have it if that had happened.
Oh, well, I'm just shocked.
Sorry.
Nobody called Alan Greenspan some type of tinfoil hat liberal?
No.
Is he an American hater?
No.
I'm just absolutely, I'm beside myself.
Some people disagree.
Some people can disagree, but nobody called him a...
No, they're respectfully disagreeing.
I see. Well, this came up on CNN Late Edition yesterday. Tom Lantos, let's see what Tom Lantos said. This is number five.
Alan Greenspan has a new book that has just come out, Chairman Lantos, entitled The Age of Turbulence, Adventures in a New World, in which he makes a very, very sharp charge.
Hello?
Charge about the war in Iraq. I'll read it to you. I am saddened that it is politically inconvenient to acknowledge what everyone knows, the Iraq war is largely about oil.
Hey,
you agree with him?
To a very large extent, I agree with him. And I think it is very remarkable that it took Alan Greenspan all these many years and being out of office for stating the obvious.
Now, they might call that guy un-American because of his silly accent.
Right, of course.
But not
Lantos. Right, of course. But Greenspan, and he, you know, Lantos knows why Greenspan is doing this now. I mean, this is so reprehensible. You trash our economic. You remember Alan Greenspan was the guy who, in 2005, was telling people, he said this in front of Congress, you're an idiot. If you get a 30-year mortgage, you're an idiot. Go out and get an adjustable rate mortgage. He said in front of Congress, there is substantial savings to be had by consumers to get an adjustable rate mortgage. It's a great deal for consumers. Go and do it.
And now he's like, well, I never said I was an expert on economics or anything.
Yeah, well, you know.
Why listen to me? I'm just a guy.
I forgot I was in front of Congress. I mean, it's reprehensible. You know, there should be a law. They won't let killers, right? I mean, some judges basically say you can't write a memoir and profit off of this crime. They shouldn't let Alan Greenspan profit off this book. The money that comes from Alan Greenspan's book should go right into the coffers of people who got hoodwinked into these funky mortgages.
Are you making a connection to OJ, Sam?
Actually, not necessarily, but
okay. Sure,
if it'll help my ratings.
I was just checking.
Why not? So here's Mike Pence. Now, this guy is a complete moron. I mean, he's said some really stupid things in the past, Lauren. Off the top of my head, I can't remember. But Google Mike Pence for me. The idiocy will come up. But here he is talking about, this is just sad. Play Mike Pence, number six.
A lot of oil reserves in Iraq, as you know, Congressman Pence. You agree with Alan Greenspan?
Well, I really don't. And I don't... I was never in meetings where the chairman of the Federal Reserve was present during the run-up to the war. I was in many meetings where we discussed the 16 different UN resolutions that have been flouted by the Iraqi regime, the unwillingness to open up to UN weapons inspectors, the record on human
rights. Hold on. Stop it right there. Chris, let's talk about this for a moment.
All right.
Saddam Hussein unwilling to open up to UN weapons inspectors?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember where 1,000 weapons inspectors from the UN were in January of 2003?
Were they in Iraq?
Oh, my God. Chris, you get a cookie.
Hooray!
That's correct. So Mike Pence is up there lying about where weapons inspectors were. He makes this case that we went to war because of 16 UN resolutions that weren't followed. Man, I hope we aren't planning to attack Israel. Larry, keep playing this moron Mike Pence.
Record on human rights.
Because, you know, a lot of people believe that the whole weapons of mass destruction was a charade. The real reason was oil.
Right. Well, we, mm-hmm. I mean, but... In point of fact, Saddam Hussein did have chemical weapons of mass destruction.
He
used them against the population.
But that was in the 80s. That was in the 80s.
It was.
Before the first Gulf War.
But, you know, I don't think anyone really doubts today, Wolf, that if the government of Saddam Hussein was in place with everything that Iran is doing with a nuclear weapons program, that there would be a nuclear weapons arms race going on between those two countries. Well,
oh, I see. So this is brilliant. this was a war to preempt a nuclear arms race that was going to happen 4 years later between Iran and Iraq. Of course, we now have no leverage to stop Iran from seeking nuclear weapons. I remember. Don't you remember now? Now I remember. Yes. I remember when George Bush got on television and said, look, we have to attack Iraq, because otherwise there'll be a nuclear arms race between Iraq and Iran. Sold. If George Bush had said that back in 2003, I would have signed up. But sadly, he did not. We're going to take a break. 866-303-2270. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
We are back. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman. Do you think Saddam Hussein was personally involved in the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon? That is a Time CBS poll. Chris?
Yes,
why don't you answer? Do you think Saddam Hussein was personally involved in the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon?
No, I do not.
Lauren?
No, I do not.
Well, congratulations, guys. 40% of all Republicans believe that, yes, Saddam Hussein was personally involved in the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon.
Ooh.
I don't know what depresses me more, that the fact that there's 40% Republicans who believe that, or 27% Democrats, 32% Independents. I mean, if you are a member of the corporate media, how embarrassed must you feel right now? I mean, how ashamed? If you cannot communicate to the American public this one basic fact, how embarrassed must you be?
Well, it depends on where you fall in the question.
Well, I mean, let's say you're at the New York Times, or let's say you're at, you know, one of these networks that are supposedly, you know, just neutral and objective. How embarrassed must you be?
But what if you work at the New York Times and you still think that Saddam Hussein was personally involved?
Then you're an idiot.
Okay.
I'm not talking about you, Lauren, but then okay. You should be, then you're beyond embarrassed. Line three, Stacy, talking about Mike Pence. I mean, that's the point, is that you got Mike Pence there saying, there was no weapons inspectors in Iraq. Yes, there were. Stacy, you're from Indiana. Tell me how much of a moron Mike Pence is.
And I think it was like late March, early April, when he went to Baghdad with John McCain, and they strolled around the market, and Pence told reporters that it was like a normal outdoor market in Indiana in the summertime.
Oh, that's right. Yes, a normal outdoor market in Indiana in the summertime with two Chinook helicopters, three Blackhawks, and 100 guys in full body armor walking around them.
That's right.
Does that happen a lot in Indiana, Stacy?
Yeah, it happens all the time.
What do you do about your hair? Your hair at that point. Once you get the helicopters hovering over you, is that an issue when you try and shop?
Oh gosh! I went to a town hall meeting with him, and I left there crying because he was the most sane person in the room. So he's definitely representing a big majority of his constituents, unfortunately. So.
Well, Mike Pence is one of those guys who's as responsible as anybody for the fact that you still have. You know, 40% of Republicans believe that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11. I mean,
yeah,
just
absolutely.
I appreciate the phone call, Stacy. Majority of Iraqis say the surge isn't working. And this is just astonishing. We'll talk about more of this on the other side. You know, we heard from General Prey how great things are in Anbar, right? In a survey conducted by ABC for ABC News, 2,200 Iraqis were surveyed, and every single one of them. Every single one of them said attacks on coalition forces was acceptable. Every single one. 100% of the survey. I don't remember that coming up in General Petraeus' testimony. We got to take a break. 866-303-2270. Cedar in for Hartman. Be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. We are back. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. I am on loan from the day of Sunday. Cedar on Sundays. We are streaming live at airamerica.com. Check it out. The site has been redesigned. If you would like to see the inner workings of the program, you can check out the Sammy Cam. We have the link at samcedarshow.com. You can see both Lauren and I. And you can see that we're actually not even real people. We're animatrons. The only person here who is actually of flesh and blood is... It's Chris, our board op. Apparently, according to Bob Woodward in the Washington Post on Monday, September 17th, that is today, ladies and gentlemen, Alan Greenspan, the former Federal Reserve chairman, said in an interview that the removal of Saddam Hussein had been essential to secure world oil supplies, a point he emphasized to the White House in private conversations before the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Excuse me? Greenspan saying, I'm not saying that's the administration's motive. I'm just saying that if someone asked me, are we fortunate in taking out Saddam, I would say it was essential. So he's backing off. This was all about oil. In his mind, the oil was prominent. See, he gets a twofer there, folks. That's what we call in radio, a twofer. He gets to sell his books. He still gets to sit on a couple of board of directors. And apparently last night on 60 Minutes, he claimed that, I'm not going to talk about my currency investments. I like to diversify. You mean you like to get two different types? You like to get ones and $5? Or $5 bills and $10 bills? No, when he says he likes to diversify his currency, folks, he's saying, yeah, look, I know the dollar is crap now. We've printed so many of these things paying for the debt, they ain't worth crap. I'm willing to bet that Alan Greenspan has as many euros as he does U.S. dollars. Getting back to that poll from the Anbar province. Now, Lauren, this is from ABC News. This is a survey conducted August 17th to the 24th.
Mm-hmm.
It was written about just yesterday in the New York Times by Gary Langer, I guess from ABC News.
Mm-hmm.
72% in Anbar expressed no confidence whatsoever in the United States forces. 76% said the United States should withdraw now. That is up from 49% when ABC polled there in March. And far above the national average. A timetable aside, if they don't ask, should they withdraw now? Every Anbar respondent in the survey opposed the presence of American forces in Iraq. Every single one. They could not find a single Iraqi in this poll to say, yeah, I'm glad they're here. 69% of those people strongly opposed the U.S. presence. Every Anbar respondent called attacks on coalition forces acceptable. Every single respondent in this poll in Anbar called the United States-led invasion wrong, including 68% who called it absolutely wrong. Every respondent said, yes, attacking U.S. forces, I don't know why they say coalition forces.
I guess maybe they're talking about any Iraqis who are working with the Americans, because they certainly aren't talking about the one guy from Kazakhstan who is working. You know, I don't know if there's anybody from Kazakhstan.
All 36 nations.
Exactly. So, Lauren, would you pull up the testimony from General Petraeus when he mentioned that things are going great in Anbar, even though every single person in Anbar, according to a poll, thinks it's acceptable to attack us? Would you pull that up? He must have talked about that in his unbiased report that he himself wrote to the United States.
No, I'm looking for it, but I don't seem to have it.
Huh. That's weird.
Actually, I don't think it exists.
You know, that's strange, Lauren. He must have that must have been just some oversight on his part.
Well, he was only in Congress for like 19 hours, so maybe he just didn't have time.
Maybe he talked about it on his Fox News interview. Or is that really an interview or just, didn't he go on for 16 minutes uninterrupted on Brit Hume's show?
Yeah, I think Brit Hume just asked him maybe two questions, like, how are you?
How does it feel to be a general? How do you get your uniform so starchy? You look great. What was one of his questions, General Petraeus? Do you realize how good you look?
I think it was. How do you get those lapels so shiny?
A week ago today, writes Walter Pincus in the Washington Post, this day, General David H. Petraeus started his rounds on Capitol Hill, reporting that security in Iraq was improving to the point that a small number of troops could begin coming home by year's end. Hey, that's great news, Lauren. Things are going so well over there. There's so much security that a small number of troops can come home.
Sounds good to me.
That's fantastic. Now, let's put aside for a moment, shall we, the fact that we have known that rotations are going to send home 30,000 troops by April of next year, that every single commander of the military has stated that over the past 6 months. Let's put that aside.
That's some inconvenient information.
Let's take this guy on his word. Things are going so swimmingly that they actually have troops to spare. There's so much security there. Maybe we need to put this music...
Come with me.
Things are going so great in Iraq. There's so much security. We've got too many soldiers and Marines here. We got to send some home. They're actually interfering. People are stepping on each other's toes. There's so much security. However, 10 days ago, his commanders in Baghdad began advertising for private contractors to work in combat supply warehouses on U.S. bases throughout Iraq because half the soldiers who had been working in the warehouses were needed for patrols, combat, and protection of U.S. forces.
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
I got news for you. General Petraeus urinated for an extended period of time on all our backs last week. I am still hoping my shirt will dry out. This is what the ad said. I mean, this is just amazing. With the increased insurgent activity... What?
Hey!
Unit supply personnel must continue to pull force protection along with convoy escort and patrol duties, according to a statement of work that accompanied the September 7th request for bidders from Multinational Force Iraq. These supply support activities, or SSAs, are currently using about 50% of their assigned military personnel for other required duties, force protection, patrol, escort duties, along with performing 24-hour combat operation, the statement says. Would you pull up the statement from General Petraeus, from General Prey, when he provided his objective analysis of how it's going over there, how effective the surge is in terms of security, where he says, well, unfortunately, we have to pull support staff off duty because we got to put
them in
the...
I'm having a lot of trouble over here, Sam.
Did you not pull that one?
No.
Wow, that's so weird. I am just absolutely shocked. Nick in Cliffside, New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Nick.
Sam Cedar.
Nick.
Hello, Sunday Sam.
Nick.
Yes.
I want to mention something that you spoke about incompetence earlier and how you saw the deeper reason as ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's certainly part of the factor. But I think you could write a book and call it Witch's Brew, and you could list incompetence, greed, larcenous greed, and ideology. And there's a sort of a synergy between those three factors. I hope some think tank does a study and adds up all the hundreds of billions of dollars, probably approaching $1 trillion in money that has gone to industries and corporations that are associated with the economic establishment, which is mostly Republican in this country, as a result of Bush's policies. It's not just Iraq. It's Katrina. It's everything. And it's directly associated with the reason why people believe, or 40% of Republicans believe, that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11.
You're absolutely right. I mean, Nick, you're absolutely right here. The incompetence is a symptom of the policy, and the policy was get rid of everybody who is a professional and put in people who only will be politically loyal to you.
But it all makes sense. When you put all these threads together, there is a method behind this madness. It makes a perverse kind of sense. It all fits. I don't know that you could say that these people are conscious or it's a conspiracy. I mean, that's beyond my pay grade. But it does make a kind of perverse sense. There's a confluence of interests. You follow?
Yes, of course. I mean, yes, it makes sense. If you do not believe that government is there to serve the people, if you believe it is simply a trough in which to shove your snout in and take as much out as possible, and if you wonder as to whether or not this is a legitimate, whether or not this is some type of conspiracy, simply Google Heritage Foundation White Paper 2001 and do a blog search and check liberaloasis.com. Bill Scheer has it all there, black and white. I mean, this is one of those think tanks actually suggested doing this. It actually suggested this is the way you run government. You don't put in a professional emergency management head to head FEMA. No, you put in Joe Alba, who was your chief fundraiser in Texas. And then you let Joe Alba put in his, his high school roommate. Dude, don't forget to give me some contracts. Now that I've left government, I'm representing all the companies who are looking for contracts in Iraq. Hey, dude, remember how I gave you that job at Homeland Security? Guess what? Everything in Iraq went to crap. I'm representing these same guys to reconstruct New Orleans. Send me some contracts, dude. Sweet. That is your conservative movement, ladies and gentlemen. That is it. That is conservative governance. Whether you look at mine safety, whether you look at the FDA, whether you look at science in this country, whether you look, it doesn't make a difference. We're going to take a break.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
We are back. Sam Seder filling in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. You know, we were just talking about how decrepit conservative governance is. Paul Krugman had a piece just on Friday. We all know that the so-called oil revenue sharing law that the Iraqi government is supposed to work on has collapsed, along with the near collapse of the government. Al-Sadr pulled his quit the ruling party, the ruling alliance, on Saturday, leaving Maliki's government teetering on the brink of failure. I mean, just literally, like existential failure. Paul Krugman writes, last month, the provincial government in Kurdistan, defying the central government, passed its own oil law. It made a deal with the Hunt Oil Company of Dallas, Texas. Well, Hunt Oil is owned by a guy named Ray L. Hunt. close political ally of George Bush. Shocking, I know. He sits on the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. Huh. Now, why would you, Lauren, if you were an oil company?
How do you know I'm not?
Well, let's say you are. Maybe you are an oil company. Why would you make a deal with Kurdistan if you know, much to the chagrin of the central government in Iraq, if you know that there is a good chance the Iraqi government is going to maintain itself and succeed in keeping some type of national unity, and all oil revenues will come through the centralized Iraqi government and be handed out to the provinces, why would you make a deal with Kurdistan?
Well, probably because I would care more about getting the most money I possibly could rather than reconciliation.
But Lauren, if all goes well in Iraq, you won't see a dime of that because Kurdistan won't have control of its own oil.
Yeah.
No, you would only do that, Lauren.
I don't like that idea.
No. You would only do that if you had reason to believe that there is going to be no central government in Iraq. You would only do that if you believe that this notion that somehow we're going to put Iraq back together is actually going to work. Now, you sitting in your chair there in the plush studios of Air America Radio, you also owning that oil company, you may not know this, which is why you would probably want a seat on the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board where you could hear about everything that's going on in Iraq.
Yeah, it would probably make me feel better if I had some kind of insider info.
Now, if you had this insider info, Lauren, and it was telling you things are going great in Iraq, things are going so well, we're going to be able to pull our security forces out. I mean, the surge is working. Lauren.
That's not the kind of insider info I'd want to hear, I guess.
Well, no. I mean, if you had that information on the inside, what would you do? You would not make a deal with Kurdistan because you would lose all your money.
I like money.
You would piss off the government in Baghdad, and you would never be able to make a deal with them. Odd. That's not what Hunt Oil did. Let's go to Eileen in New York City, Line 8. Welcome to the program, Eileen.
Hi, Sam.
How are
you? Good to hear you during the week.
Oh, good to hear from you, Eileen.
This is not apropos of anything of today's show, but it's a story I know you'll enjoy.
Oh, then I want to hear it.
I was listening to another station during your old time slot,
uh-huh.
And who should call in but your old friend Dewey.
Oh, my God.
And guess what the subject matter was? Senator
Dewey?
Larry Craig.
Oh, no. Now, we should tell people Dewey was a longtime conservative caller of my program when I was on during the week. And Dewey was very concerned that there were Democratic senators wearing pink ties on the floor of the House.
Yes.
That it would send the wrong message to our enemies that we were weak and girlish.
Right.
And
much,
so
much to your surprise, I'm sure you'll be shocked to hear that he did not find the senator's actions the least bit unusual, and he certainly doesn't think he's gay.
Well, I certainly do not believe that Dewey would find it the least bit unusual. I am convinced that Dewey himself, I think he almost nearly admitted to me on air that he has probably spent some time in some restrooms. I think Dewey and Senator Craig probably have some very similar inclinations and denial issues. But, Eileen, you have made my day.
I knew it would. I got such a kick out of thinking about how you would have handled that call.
Well, tell me, how did the NPR host react to Dewey?
Well, the NPR host didn't know Dewey the way you do. So,
I understand.
He took him at face value.
Did he know that it was John Malkovich really putting on a voice?
I doubt it.
Thank you for the call,
Sam.
Eileen. I appreciate it. Let's go to Paul in Round Mountain, California. Welcome to the program, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Sam. How are you doing?
Just got a minute, Paul.
Okay, so John Edwards goes on TV.
Mm-hmm.
He proposes, he says that the Congress doesn't have the courage to end their war. He tells them to send a bill with a timeline to Bush. No funding, no timeline, no funding.
Right.
And this doesn't appear anywhere. Not on the left, not on the right. Nobody's interested. Is this some kind of, I don't know, what's going on?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I mean, right now there's a lot of other news. I know that maybe simultaneously Obama has done the exact same thing. And I know Dodd has issued that. And I guess it remains to be seen if...
But there hasn't even been a recounting of what he called for anywhere.
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't gotten a press release about it, and usually I get press releases about these things.
Well, it's on YouTube. You can look it up.
Oh, this was part of his statement after Bush's speech?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean,
you know, so he says that the Congress doesn't have the courage to end the war. Do they have the courage to end the war, or don't they?
Well, I mean, Paul,
I mean, is this a progressive position, or is this a DNC position? What position do they take to this? They have no position. They're just ignoring it.
Well, I mean, I think some Democrats are hearing it, but I agree with you. The Democrats got to get more aggressive about this. We'll be right back. 866-303-2270.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman on loan from Cedar on Sundays. We are streaming live at airamerica.com. Check out the new site redesign. We are also in full effect with the Sammy Cam. This is an amazing technology which allows you to see my mouth move as I speak and watch Lauren. Lauren, are you there?
Yes, sir.
I know you're there because I see you on the Sammy Cam.
Hello, everyone.
And watch Lauren react to what I say. It's fascinating. And, of course, during the breaks, I take your questions and comments, and you can watch me do show prep. Or just cuss at the latest thing that I see that annoys me from the right wing. We were talking about how Ray L. Hunt, chief executive of Hunt Oil Company of Dallas, who sits on the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, apparently is betting against George Bush's policies, and he should know he sits on the presidential Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. I think he probably gets some good inside dope. And by that I mean information on whether or not he should piss off the central government of Iraq by engaging in a oil deal with the Kurds or not. Max in St. Louis, Missouri, welcome to the program.
Oh, good afternoon, Sam Cedar, now on Monday, at least today.
That's correct.
Well, nothing personal. It's just business.
Yes, no, I understand. Of course it's not personal, but, I mean, listen, follow the money.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, this is the kind of thing I did not listen to the entire hearings last week, but I don't recall the ones that what I did listen to, I don't recall this coming up. And, by the way, I heard about this situation last week on another Air America program, and then it's in Krugman's article, which, by the way, you need to deal with the last part of that article about rewriting history, but that's another thing we know that's coming.
Of course, you know, well, Alan Greenspan is you know, it's we're getting the latest chapter in that from Alan Greenspan.
But what I want to know, I mean, once again, it's so frustrating, and I called my Senator Claire McCaskill this morning and asked the person who answered the phone there who took my comment, asked for her to bring this up. I don't hear any Democrats talking about this. It should have been a question for the general last week.
Or at the very least Crocker. I mean, you know, the whole
and Crocker.
These whole hearings were made this sort of parade of this guy in a uniform, and I appreciate the phone call, Max. These hearings were just made this parade of this guy in a uniform. Look, the bottom line is he's just in charge of the tactics. He's not in a position to give any type of report on the success of the goals. The goals are, as stated by the president, when he launched this so-called surge, which is basically an escalation, we all know it's just a way for him to kick the can, to keep this occupation going well after he is out of office. But the supposed goals of this escalation were to give the Iraqi central government time and space and breathing space for reconciliation. And in fact, George Bush seems to think that it's all working. I mean, George Bush, here's George Bush telling us what we're going to get with a free Iraq. This is number 20. He is so hopeful here. You got it, Chris? This is from his speech Thursday night.
A free Iraq will marginalize extremists, unleash the talent of its people, and be an anchor of stability in the region. A free Iraq will set an example for people across the Middle East. A free Iraq will be our partner in the fight against terror, and that will make us safer here at home.
In a world of pure imagination, take a look and you'll see.
A free Iraq will make cotton candy come out of the skies. Free Iraq is going to make it so that every time you turn on the faucet, chocolate water is going to come out. And you can drink it, and it's going to be dietetic, but not with any, like, cancer-causing substances or anything like that. You're just going to be able to drink the chocolate and never gain any weight. A free Iraq is going to make it possible that you can actually have jetpacks in your shoes. And you won't have to walk if you want to. People will say, take a walk over there. And you just say, remind them, Iraq is free. I'm not going to have to use my legs. I'm going to be able to jetpack by clicking my heels together. Unbelievable, this guy. So none of the goals have been met. There is no Iraqi government. Mukhtar al-Sadr's movement has pulled out. And I don't remember this. Now, Lauren, I want you to listen carefully, and I want you to pull this from Ambassador Krakow's testimony last week.
Okay, I'm ready.
The U.S. ambassador to Iraq warned that it may take the U.S. government as long as 2 years to process and admit nearly 10,000 Iraqi refugees referred by the United Nations for resettlement to the United States because of bureaucratic bottlenecks. The sensitive but unclassified memo sent September 7th. So this was 4 days before he testified in front of Congress. The memo was sent by Ryan Krakow. Laid out a wrenching ground-level view of the U.S. government's halting response to Iraq's refugee crisis. Now, when he testified, will you pull up the part where he said, look, we have a major refugee catastrophe happening. We have 2 million Iraqis are displaced inside Iraq, 2.2 million who have left the country, 60,000 Iraqis fleeing their homes every month. Anybody who's been associated with us is going to be killed. And we can't get anybody to get a visa to the United States. I'm glad I have this opportunity to sit in front of you and tell you this, Congressman or Senator, because this is a very important issue that I know you're going to want to know about. This really does speak to the situation in Iraq. Would you pull up that sound that we have from Ambassador Krakow?
Oh, Sam, I'm so sorry. We have a lot of audio, but we don't have that.
I am just shocked.
I'm going to fire myself right now.
Do you know how many... 2.2 million have left Iraq. Chris, this is a question for you.
Sure.
You know that how much we're doing this for the Iraqi people because we love the Iraqi people, right?
And, oh, man, of course.
And we know how much, what Iraqi freedom is going to mean and how much what a debt of gratitude we owe to those Iraqi folks, right?
Of course.
I mean, George Bush has told us that many times.
Mm-hmm.
There have been 2.2 million Iraqis who have left Iraq. Another 2 million who have had to leave their homes because of ethnic cleansing. Mm-hmm. How many would you say, since 2003, we owe these Iraqis, remember now, George Bush, we owe these Iraqis a huge debt of gratitude. Stand up, do you remember the purple fingers? They had their fingers turned purple so they could vote. With the purple fingers. These brave people, we owe them a debt of gratitude that you could never, in a million years... And also, we want to thank them for the chocolate. Doesn't make you fat because of Iraqi freedom. How many of these people, of these 2.2 million people who are looking for a new home because they've fled Iraq, how many do you think the United States has admitted into this country?
Like,
take a guess.
I'm going to say 100 million.
100 million out of 2 million.
All right, maybe just 1 million then. Am I close?
Well, you're way off with 100 million.
Yeah.
All right, let me ask Lauren, because obviously you can't do it. Lauren, go ahead, tell me.
Oh, gosh. 200,000?
No, that's a good guess. Terry from Colorado, line 3. Terry, Let me ask you a question from Terry from Colorado. Are you there?
You got it, brother. Hey, dude.
Terry.
How you doing?
Terry.
I'm there, man.
Answer me this question. 2.2 million Iraqis have fled Iraq. How many do you think the United States have let in of these refugees?
Probably not enough of those good people.
Well, I mean, give me a guess. Give me a number.
I have no bloody idea, and I don't care.
Well, no, all right. Well, Terry, you don't care. We'll get to that in a moment because that's fascinating to me. But how many? Just give me a guess.
I would probably say it's less than 1,000.
1,500 out of 2.2 million.
There you go. We're that close. I'm a pretty well-read conservative, so you can shake and bake me. Come on.
Well,
down.
That's pretty good. Now, I mean, that's good because you also have told us the reason why we have let in so few is because we don't really care. I mean, we're not really doing this for the Iraqis, right?
The reason why I was calling, that's a great segue. I'm one of those conservatives in the road that love to get and find out what the enemy is thinking. So I read my New York Times. I listen to all of you folks in Air America.
The enemy.
I heard somebody.
Wait, you're saying that the enemy is not Al-Qaeda?
The enemy is Al-Qaeda, but there's some people in this country that think that we are the enemy. You know, Americans are the enemy.
Well, didn't you just say the New York Times was the enemy? Didn't you just say you listened to this program because you want to listen to the enemy?
I think Ben Stein, who writes in there every Sunday, is not the enemy. There's a lot of great writers in there, but there's...
But you're saying that other Americans are the enemy, right, Terry? Didn't you just say that?
Well, unfortunately, in America, Sammy, there's a lot of people in America who think that capitalism is bad, who think that...
So anybody who thinks that capitalism is bad is the enemy?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who really think we are the enemy, who Americans are bad. We're bad.
Well, you just told me you were that person.
No, I think most Americans are good.
Okay, good. All right. So most Americans are good.
Yeah.
And...
But I have a couple of questions, statements for you on Iraq that I'd love your thoughts and you can hit me on whatever you want. First of all, regarding Iraq, you know that Kuwait and Saudi Arabia are right next door. Do you know how big our military is in both of those countries? Do you know how big it is?
You don't
have to give me a number, but do you understand how big the American Army and the American Air Force is in those countries?
We are very big in Kuwait. Hold on for a second. Terry, let me answer your question. We're huge in Kuwait. We're actually very small in Saudi Arabia. We closed our base there prior to the Iraq invasion.
It's so big that we could take over both of those countries in 24 hours and have a camel barbecue at the end of the day and laugh about it. And here's the great part.
Hey, Terry, will you hold on? We got to take a break. I want to pick you up on the other side.
All of their oil fields.
Terry. Man, I'll tell you, you conservatives are just so ranting. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. We're going to listen to Terry of Colorado, who wants to have a camel barbecue and believes that there are enemies inside of America. All right, we'll be right back after this.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
All right, we are back. Now, Terry from Colorado is a guy who says he doesn't care about the Iraqi refugees and is attempting to make some type of point about why we're in Iraq. So you were saying, Terry from Colorado.
Thank you. Thank you, Sammy, for letting me just have a little dialogue with you. And I'm very curious about what you think about this. But I am very, very curious about what your listeners have to say about this, because I hear so many people saying it's oil and are taking, of course, Greenspan's comment out of context. But specifically, if you look at Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, we can take over both countries in less than 24 hours and have a nice camel barbecue at the end and laugh about it.
Now, Terry, Terry.
And their oil fields, Sammy, their oil fields are all out in the desert. They're not in the cities and stuff, where we could easily rope them off, declare it a 51st state, have all the oil we want.
Hold on for a second. First of all.
I just want your thoughts on that, please.
All right, here's my thoughts. A, we cannot occupy Kuwait. People would freak out. We're not even, our U.S. military personnel are not even allowed to leave the base in Kuwait. Do you know how many soldiers we had in Kuwait prior to the invasion of Iraq?
I have no bloody idea.
Give me an idea. You know all about this. Tell me, Terry.
It's enough to take over the kingdom.
4,000. Do you know how many we have in Saudi Arabia right now, Terry? Do you know, Terry? Do you know, Terry? You just... Hold on. Pot him down for a second. Pot him down. Terry, you just pontificated on a national radio show about how easily we could take over Kuwait. We don't need Iraq. We don't need our troops in Iraq. We don't need bases in Iraq. We could take over Kuwait in a day. We could take over Saudi Arabia in a moment. We wouldn't have to deal with Sunni and Shia. Well, here's the fact, Terry, and I'm going to pod you back up in a second. We got 4,000 people, 5,000 people in Kuwait prior to the invasion of Iraq. We cannot occupy there. The Kuwaitis would lose it. We have no people in Saudi Arabia now. None. And that is because we had to get out of there. That's how come Osama bin Laden went on his jihad. And if you don't think we'd be dealing with Sunni and Shia, pod Terry back up. I want to hear this genius explain some things to me about the Middle East. Terry, you still there?
Sammy, yeah, Sammy, have I called you a name?
Terry.
I'm having a dialogue. I notice whenever a conservative has a dialogue with a leftist or a socialist, and that's really what liberals are, they're very cute words, cute way of describing a socialist and a leftist who hates
America. I think I'm arguably
a
socialist, yes.
I have not called you a name cute yet or whatever, brilliant, but I'm trying to have a dialogue.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to call you a genius, Terry.
Terry,
now tell me this. You say that we don't have to deal with Sunni and Shiite in Saudi Arabia. Where are the fields controlled? Who controls the oil fields in Saudi Arabia?
Let me clarify. We wouldn't have to be involved with a cute little civil war going on in Iraq. We would just rope off the oil fields in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. End of oil problem. So I don't buy into anybody's assertion that it's about oil. That's too simple, Sammy. It really is.
Well, here, Terry, let me explain something to you. The oil in Saudi Arabia is in a Shiite area. Saudi Arabia is controlled by Sunni.
Whatever, could be Kurds.
No. Terry, you cannot say we wouldn't have to deal with a civil war if we did that. Secondly, the reason why we do have an occupation of Iraq, Terry, is so that we can do what you're saying. It is because we want to control the oil fields in Saudi Arabia, we want to control the oil fields in Iraq, and it's not to get us oil, Terry. Do a little bit of reading. I'm going to have to say goodbye to you because we're running out of time on this end, and I'm going to take some more calls on the other side. Do a little reading. Google Lynn Cheney and Gary Hart. You will see the neocons are obsessed with China. And who gets most of their oil from the Middle East? It's not us, Terry. It's China. This is their geopolitical strategy. This is what they outline in the Project for New American Century. We are there because of oil. Some people could argue that's a necessary reason to be there. But that's why we're there. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back after this. Cedar and Fox.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
All right, we are back. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. Lauren, when does Tom return?
He's back tomorrow.
And he will be back tomorrow. I wish I could say in this very seat, but he is actually across the country from me. We have the incredible technology, including AirAmerica.com, the new site redesign. Accepting your comments, and of course, SamCedarShow.com, where you will find a link to the SammyCam. So that you can see both Lauren and I performing our radio hosting duties. On the phone is Don from Finland to talk about that last caller, Terry, who for some reason thinks that we're not there because of oil. We could invade these other countries and get their oil if we wanted to. Don, welcome to the program.
Hey, Sam. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Yeah, this guy, yeah, he definitely is a bonehead. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not calling any names. We're not going to do that.
Right, let's be polite about this. He's not a genius. Yeah. He's not a bonehead. He's a conservative.
Yes. Ooh, damn. Anyway, Sam, the entire Middle East oil fields are run by the Shias. That's why there's such an affinity with Iran. Iran is not a stupid, they're not stupid. In Qatar, the Shias own it. In Bahrain, the Shias run the oil. The Sunnis are the controlling families for the country, but the oil is controlled by the Shia. The natural gas, that's all Shia. So if we just go and attack Iran, all of that goes away.
So the bottom line is, even in Saudi Arabia, although the House of Saud is Sunni, the local control of the oil is Shia?
That's all Shia. Over in the eastern side, yeah, that's all Shia. I worked for Saudi Aramco down there. It was very contentious because the Sunnis were in control of running the company, but the guys out there drilling the oil, digging, spotting the fields, those are all Shia.
And so there's this natural tension there. So the notion that we could avoid a civil war if we were to go in and take over the oil fields in Saudi Arabia is foolish.
Yeah, I would say at the very least. Well, not to mention that you have about 1.5 billion Muslims that will put all of their differences aside to attack you or attack back.
And tell me, to what extent, do you have any familiarity with our bases in Kuwait?
Well, I was over there as a contractor for about 3 years, and without going into too much detail, the military in Kuwait is not designed as a war fighting. It's not even really it's not designed for that. It was just mainly to stage troops, which is naturally what they're supposed to do. That's public knowledge. I mean, you can go on Google and do troop estimates for Kuwait. I mean, you got more contractors in Kuwait than you have soldiers.
All right, Don, I appreciate the phone call. It is nice to hear someone who is actually speaking from some level of experience. Thanks for calling in, Don. Let's go to Tony in San Diego. Welcome to the program, Tony.
Thank you, Sam. First of all, I want to say that from the last caller, Terry, you know, he's mentioned something that I encourage. I don't know how you want to say it, but, and I feel ashamed for even saying it, that sometimes I do listen to the other guy's radio station only because I want to see what they're thinking, and I got to tell you, Sam, it's scary. It really is. I listen to them, and I just, it's mind-boggling how they think. So I want to thank you, first of all, for being on the radio and kind of, you know, saying the truth and saying it the way it is.
Well, I appreciate it, Tony. So what was your comment?
My comment is on how he said that about us invading the other countries. I'm here to tell you, Sam, that the military, we're strained, and I'm going to say we because I am in the military. We're really strained to the point of we cannot invade anybody else or take over or occupy or whatever you want to call it on the conservative side, because right now, as we, you know, right now the way we're doing it is we are literally taking members from other branches of the service to help out the Army and the Marines because they don't have enough people to do it. So what the general public doesn't know is that there is a draft, but you don't want to call it a draft. It's an internal thing. We're so strained overseas that we're taking inexperienced sailors and Marines or sailors and airmen to help out the Army because we don't have enough people. So the general public is being fooled by the conservative group by saying that we're so strong over there, we're barely hanging on. So I just want to say, you know, that this guy, Terry, he definitely needs to join the military and get a real taste of it.
Well, I appreciate the call, Tony, and I appreciate the suggestion. My guess is Terry is not on his way to enlist right now. As much as he sees this as being really crucial, not about oil. I mean, you know, unfortunately, Terry was very long-winded. We didn't get a chance to actually hear what it is he wants to tell us it's about over there. It's about making Iraq's Iraqi freedom, which will give everybody jetpacks and
You'll have the ability, Iraqi freedom will have the ability that every individual will be able to come up with a winning lottery number. Now everybody's, we've got to work out how everybody gets in line to buy the lottery tickets. Blackwater. Iraq's Interior Ministry has revoked the license of Blackwater USA, an American security firm whose contractors are blamed for a Sunday gun battle in Baghdad that left 8 civilians dead. We have revoked Blackwater's license to operate in Iraq. As of now, they're not allowed to operate anywhere in the Republic of Iraq. You know, when you've got a company that whose behavior of their contractors is bad enough to have their license to operate in a ongoing occupation and civil war, their license to operate is revoked by that government. Is this a good idea to put these people on the streets of New Orleans, let's say, after an emergency? Or wherever else Joe Alba and FEMA decide they want to put Blackwater? I think Joe Alba represents Blackwater, former head of FEMA. Is this a good idea? I mean, if their behavior is too violent in the middle of a war, do we really want them patrolling the streets of the United States?
I wouldn't invite them to my birthday party.
Huh. That's probably a good idea. Kevin from Colorado, line 4. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Sammy.
Kevin.
Hey, this is an honor to speak to you, buddy.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak to you.
Colorado, and I really enjoyed the show today. Lauren and Chris are working with you and making a nice show. It's flowing really good. We don't all think goofy like whatever that guy was from Colorado. There's no way. I can't believe that he doesn't get the point after we've tried to occupy Iraq and it's not working, and why he thinks we're going to be able to occupy Kuwait. And then when you give him the numbers, he acts like he didn't even hear anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course.
They're so ideologically bent. It's just unbelievable. It's like, we've got the greatest army in the world. We've got the greatest idea. We're here to steal your oil. Don't you get it? You know, and please let us have it. And if you don't, we'll kill you.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate the phone call. You make a very good point. I mean, I can't thank Terry enough for calling in, because I was trying to, how could I convince Lauren that this study done about the brain neurons of liberals and conservatives show that conservatives are incapable of thinking? Here you have Terry, who makes an argument. Sam, do you know how many soldiers we got, military personnel we have in Kuwait and in Saudi Arabia? We could take over those countries in a day.
Terry, we have no military personnel in Saudi Arabia. We have only military personnel who provide staging in Kuwait and aren't even allowed to leave the base.
Well, we wouldn't have to deal with the civil war. We don't have any problems with Sunni and Shia in Saudi Arabia.
Well, the Shia control the oil, and the Sunni run the government. And, in fact, if we would, we would have to deal with a civil war or a regional war.
Now, why is it that this does not penetrate? Why is it that this conservative calls in, states his theory based on no facts, cannot let go of that theory once he's confronted with the facts?
Right. So the study was about the ability of adapting to new information and
being flexible. Thinking.
Not thinking. That conservatives are stupid.
No, it's not that they're stupid. They don't have the capacity to think.
They're less flexible.
They glom on to one idea that one of their leaders will tell them, and they can't let go.
So when you gave him some new information that he hadn't heard, he got flustered.
He got flustered and befuddled, and then moved to, how come you called me a genius? How come you called me a genius? Why is it that you're making fun of me? Respondents who had described themselves as liberals showed a significantly greater conflict-related neural activity when the hypothetical situation called for an unscheduled break in routine. In other words, when you're not regurgitating what Sean Hannity tells you, or when you are and you get some facts, you do not have the capacity to actually answer those facts. Jean in California, line 9. Welcome to the program, Jean.
Hi, Sam. Boy, it is an honor to talk to you. I've listened to you for years.
I think we need a shift in defining political positions. In a democracy, to be antisocial and to uphold bigotry, these can no longer be taken seriously as political ideology, I don't think. Folks like Terry, who consider the commons and social consciousness un-American, are just plain antisocial types. Theirs is not a political position. It's almost like a disease state.
You know what? I couldn't have said that better, Gene. In fact, I'm holding in my hand a post by one of my favorite bloggers, Digby, from digbysblog.blogspot.com. And she writes, I don't care. I could care less if Condi Rice is gay. This is based on a story that came out about Condi Rice owning a house with a woman and responding to rumors. But she writes, it's become clear in the last few years that right-wingers are psychologically unfit to lead the nation. Vast numbers of them are conservative, in quotations, not due to political philosophy, but to cover up for serious personal issues with sexuality, masculinity, Oedipal complexes, and worse. In fact, it's so pervasive that one must now assume that conservative political leaders are driven by a complicated desire to compensate for psychological problems rather than the usual political mix of ambition, ego, and drive to power. Of course! I mean, that explains everything. There's no doubt in my mind, if we were to examine the ungenius's life, Terry's life, we would find a mix of psychological issues that he is not dealing with. That makes it easy for him to say, we can take over everybody, please. I mean, I'm convinced Jerry was holding his hand a G.I. Joe action figure in his hand. What do you call it? All right, thank you for the call, Gene. I appreciate it. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman, 866-303-2270.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
We're back. Sam Cedar filling in for Tom Hartman. A couple of our IMers on the Sammy Cam have told me that the fact is that as our troops fly through Kuwait, they can't even wear their uniform. That is how inhospitable Kuwait is to our military personnel. And I was just saying to Chris Lopresto, our board op, who has done a magnificent job today, almost as good as Lauren does every day. Chris was feeling bad that he didn't pick up on when I asked him how many of the 2.2 million Iraqi refugees we have taken in this country. He answered 100 million.
I got my numbers wrong.
You got your numbers wrong, but you did start your career here at Air America. Board opping Mark Maron's show.
Yes.
And that, I tell you, there is no better way to learn to tune someone out than to be in the physical proximity of Mark Maron.
It's true. I actually learned to tune Mark out faster than I tuned my mom out.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, there's probably not a dramatic difference. Folks, visit airamerica.com and also samcedarshow.com. If you visit samcedarshow.com, you will get the information, not only a link to the Sammy Cam, not only the information that I will be riding shotgun tomorrow on the Young Turks with Jank, but you will also see a link to a little project that Mark Maron and I will be engaging in tomorrow. Lily in San Marcos, California. Welcome to the program, Lily.
Yeah, Sam, I miss you and Mark a ton.
Well, then you're going to definitely want to go visit samcedarshow.com later today to find out what Mark and I are going to do tomorrow.
Great, great. You know, I was wondering, you know, during when the Republicans were heading up the Senate and Congress, they used to hold everything up in committee. And my question is why isn't OB holding up and negotiating with the White House in regards to what they want in the Appropriations Committee? Why do we keep on saying it's going to get vetoed?
Well, I mean, look, I don't know if the tactic you're talking about is the best tactic because, I mean, it was easier for the Republicans from a PR game because they also have the presidency. But I will say this, that there is no reason why Obey can't adopt the same type of amendment to the appropriations bill that Jim Webb is going to offer. And there is a strategy out there presented by a guy named Mark Kleinman. I can't remember the blog right now, which suggests basically what the Democrats should do. If they have 57 votes to pass it, who cares about the Republicans filibustering? Attach this amendment, the Webb Amendment, which says that if you deploy troops for 15 months, they need 15 months at home. If you deploy them for 12 months, they needed 12 months at home. Mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera. Attach this to the appropriations thing and force the Republicans to filibuster the appropriations bill. Force them to do it. And start talking about the fact that it's not a question. You don't need 60 votes to pass anything in the Senate. You need 60 votes to overcome a filibuster so that you can actually have a vote on
right.
it. And I'm not going to sit here like all those right-wingers and say that a filibuster is unconstitutional, but it is a legitimate use of Senate legislative tactics. So the Democrats have to get smart about it and use their own tactics.
Right, right. I think that's the frustration is just the frustration of the Democrats, you know, just like shrugging their shoulders. And it's just...
I hear you, Lily. It's
okay,
frustrating. I got to jump. I want to take one more call. Bill from Santa Monica, California. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Thank you. My first call to any show, and actually it's odd. I wanted to bring up kind of what the lady prior to me has been talking about, but in a little bit different way.
Well, that's a perfect then.
Very interesting. It would seem to me that there's an easy way to stop this war regarding the appropriations, which is, you know, which could also take in Air America and all of our liberal media. If for 1 week you guys all got together and, you know, Air America, NPR, all our local stations, and asked of our listeners two simple questions, which is, one, do you want your brothers, sisters, sons and daughters, mothers and fathers serving in Iraq to come home now? I'm sure the response would be overwhelmingly yes.
Yes.
Since I've heard that 70% of the people in America don't want the war. And the second question would simply be, if the Democrats in Congress defunded the occupation tomorrow, would you support them 100% in November, explaining to them that defunding the war doesn't mean leaving people in Iraq sitting in ditches? And if it's true that there are 68% of the people against this war, I would assume that at that point the answer would be yes. And if you guys could, for 1 week, conduct a 10-minute straw poll on all of your shows, just take 10 minutes and conduct a very simple poll asking these two questions.
But, Bill, here's the problem with what you're saying, is that these people are living in a hermetically sealed bubble. And the bottom line is I think it's going to take 75, 78%. And we've got to get those people. So it's, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I don't think there's necessarily something wrong with it. But the idea is you've got to go to your neighbor in California on both sides and let them understand. And we need more leadership from our Democratic representatives selling this idea to the American people. Thank you very much, Tom, for letting me fill in. Talk to you on Sunday. Sam Cedar for Hartman. Stick around for Randy Rhodes.